different symbolic prophecies of a series of four empires that will succeed each other leading up to the time of the Messiah. One of them is a prophecy about a statue that Nebuchadnezzar, the king of Babylon, who destroyed Jerusalem the first time round, has this vision of a statue that's gold at the top and then has silver shoulders and then a bronze torso and iron legs that eventually mingle with clay, and finally are only clay, has feet purely of clay. And then the idol is destroyed by a stone cut from a mountain, not by human hand. And then the stone becomes a great mountain that fills the whole earth. And this seems to be a prophecy of a succession of five different monarchies, which almost every one of the fathers, I believe Ephraim the Syrian gives it a different interpretation, but every other father who comments on it interprets to mean the Babylonian Empire, the Persian Empire, the Macedonian Empire of Alexander the Great and his successors, and then finally the Roman Empire is the Iron Monarchy. And St. Jerome says that even earlier writers say that the Roman Empire will be divided in two, which of course it was. And St. Jerome says that it will then become mingled with barbarian nations, which he says he can see happening in his own time.
Uh-huh.
Because the Roman Empire is becoming overwhelmed. It's a strange business whereby they sort of franchised out their military capacity until it was completely run by barbarians.
Yeah.
And then St. Hippolytus, he actually says that the 10 toes of the idols will be 10 democracies who will into which the two halves of the Roman Empire will eventually be divided. It's all very mysterious. But anyway, and then the kingdom of the Messiah is the kingdom which destroys the idol, the stone cut off not by hand that then becomes a mountain, filling the entire earth. And there's a different representation of the same events later on in the book, where the four empires are shown as four different beasts. And the first one is a lion with wings, and then a bear, and then a leopard with four heads, and then finally a nameless beast with iron claws that crushes all the others beneath it and is completely terrifying, and which has seven heads and 10 horns, and then it's interesting, the first of the four empires, the lion has its wings plucked off, and it stands on its hind legs and is given the heart of a man. And this appears to symbolize the conversion of Nebuchadnezzar to monotheism. So he removes his pretensions to divinity. That's the removal of the wings.
Yeah.
And then he stands up on his hind legs and is given the heart of a man. So the state itself remains pagan, but the ruler is humanized by his acceptance of the one true God, and then the nameless beast is finally destroyed by one like a son of man. So people often think, well, what's this meaning of this title that our Lord used? And it seems to have been very cryptic when he used it himself, and people wanted to know what it meant. And of course, Son of Man is used, for example, in the prophet Ezekiel just to mean a human being. But specifically, this fifth empire in Daniel is called one like a son of man, because meaning that this is an authentically human kingdom, an authentically human polity, because it worships the one true God, but it's also an individual as well as a kingdom, and the thrones are set up, famously thrones plural are set up, which is also was a cause of great interest. I believe also in the Talmud there's a rabbi whose name I forget. who suggested that the reason why the plural is used is because one of the thrones was for David and one was for God, the Ancient of Days, as he's described in that passage. And this got him, the other rabbis got very annoyed when this suggests it's how dangerously Christian.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Son of God and son of David, right? I mean,
so the term son of man already contains the doctrine of the mystical body, because it's a reference to this kingdom of the Messiah as well as to the Messiah himself as being the same personhood. And of course our Lord makes it finally explicit and clear that that's what he's referring to at the climactic moment of his trial, before Caiaphas, when he adjures him, "I adjure you by the living God, are you the Christ, the Son of the Blessed One?" And he says, "I am, and you will see the Son of Man coming at the right hand of the power in the clouds of heaven." And Caiaphas tears his garments. So you have our Lord both confessing his divinity and that he is the Messiah, the promised Messiah, and the doctrine of the mystical body, all in the same sentence, at this key moment in his trial. There's this key line when it says in Daniel that the Messiah will take over the kingdom of well, this is the key question. It says, "And the saints of the Most High, who are embodied in the Son of Man, the saints of the Most High will inherit the kingdom." And that's been interpreted. It's usually interpreted, interestingly, by Western commentators. It's interpreted much more boringly, as it were, as just meaning they will then be the saints of the Most High who are in charge of things. But Eastern commentators have interpreted it more narrowly as meaning that the fourth monarchy, the kingdom, to refer to the fourth monarchy, that is the Roman Empire, will be inherited by the saints of the Most High. Saint Jerome is not very enthusiastic about that interpretation in his commentary, but Eusebius of Caesarea, who albeit is not a unproblematic figure, but he's a very important writer. He in his oration in praise of Constantine, he interprets that as meaning the taking over of the Roman Empire by the saints of by the Christians, by the saints of the Most High. And then that was the general interpretation in the East. Saint Cyril, the apostle of the Slavs, we have an eyewitness life of Saint Cyril called the Slavic life of Constantine the philosopher, because his baptismal name was Constantine. Cyril was his name in religion, which he took just when he became a monk, only a few months before he died in Rome. But he was a Byzantine. He belonged to the Eastern Roman Empire. And he was sent on a number of missions by the Eastern emperors in the 9th century. And one of these was to the Khazars in the Crimea, who were an Asiatic tribe who were thinking of converting to Judaism. Oddly, that's something that happened in those days, apparently. He was sent out there to try and convince them to convert to Christianity instead. And he ended up having a disputation with some rabbis. And part of the disputation revolved around the meaning of these prophecies in Daniel. And the rabbis said that it couldn't be that Jesus of Nazareth is the Messiah, because it's clear in Daniel's prophecies that the Roman Empire will be destroyed by the kingdom of the Messiah, which will succeed to it. But Cyril himself, or Constantine as he was then, Constantine the philosopher, was a citizen of the Roman Empire, the Byzantine Empire, as historians call it, but it was known at the time by its own people as the Roman Empire. And so it's still there. So how can Jesus be the Messiah?